Hello, everyone. Welcome to another amazing episode of the Jarvis Podcast, part of the Nonsensical Nonsense Network. Today, I'm reviewing the Porky's 1981 movie, but I'm not alone. I got my buddy and friend, Blazin. Blazin, how are you doing, bro?
I am doing awesome, and I'm looking forward to doing a review on Porky's. It's been one of my kind of favorites since my adolescence. So, yeah, this would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, a lot of those movies back in the 80s were just able to hit on that time.
I always considered Porky's one of those most favored TNA movies from the 80s. So it was a whole genre of TNA movies back then.
definitely. I mean, it's so funny how a lot of these raunchy comedies started with Animal House, and then in the 80s it was kind of like, well, they kind of did these movies, so let's see if we could bring them a little bit forward a decade and ultimately go a little bit farther. I mean, you had Caddyshack that kind of went a little bit further than some of the movies of those eras in comedy. So, I mean, it got to the point where movies were trying to top each other in different decades.
Oh, absolutely. I think this movie was around the time. I mean, it was 81, and movies like that. God, I can't remember when Animal House came out, but I think it was late 70s.
Mid to late 70s, I think.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a whole genre of those raunchy comedies that came out around that time that I think a lot of them just became cult classics. So, and just to name a few, like you said, Animal House, Porky's was one. And unfortunately, nothing else comes to my mind right now, but I know they're out there.
Benji, how are you doing? Thank you for joining us today. Hopefully it ain't too much of a shit show. I know no Saturdays usually is with the open door challenge, but you know, it is what it is. There's my wifey. Hey, Alyssa, how are you doing? Welcome to the show. But yeah, as you said, you know, with Porky's, it's kind of like a no holds barred comedy movie of the 80s. And I mean, you have Kim Cattrall, you have Bob. It's directed by Bob Clark, who I do believe actually directed a horror movie back in the 70s called Black Christmas, which is really weird how they're like, hey, we're going to make a really, really kind of newer adaptation of Animal House in a way. We know you did a horror movie, but could you do this comedy movie for us?
I think it shows versatility when it comes to directors and writers when they can, you know, go cross genre, I guess.
Well, exactly. I mean, and that's why we don't have those directors today. You know, they stick to one genre and then they pretty much are done.
Yes.
With that one genre. And if they can't make it, they try to go to a different genre. I mean, heck, Rob Zombie, you know, tried to go from the grindhouse to more, you know, remakes to TV spinoffs and couldn't really do it.
Yeah.
And so with Porky's, what you get is people or kids, teenagers that want to have some fun and they go to local, God, I don't even know what you would call it.
It was a stripper bar. And just so everybody knows, the movie was like we said, made in 1981, but the setting was 1954.
Yeah.
In Florida. So there's a lot of cultural specifics of that area inside the movie. So,
oh, I mean, definitely.
Yeah.
It is what it is back. I mean, and that's the thing, you know, back in the day, in the 80s and 70s and even in the 90s, in some cases, they were able to do so much different shit than what they are today. And I mean, Kim Cattrall in this movie is pretty much the hottest chick in the world. I mean, let's be honest.
She has aged. She's aged well. Yes.
Yeah, she has. And then another thing is the nickname that they give her character, Lassie.
Oh yes, that was, you know, that scene was, oh man, that's like, that's one of the, like, there's a few iconic scenes from that movie. No matter how many times you've watched it or how long you've watched it, they just stick out, and that's definitely one. However, the Lassie nickname, I think she screamed more like a banshee during that scene, but I get it.
I was about to say.
Yes, yes.
But, oh my God, and the guy trying to get her to shut up.
Ends up shoving a dirty jock strap in her mouth. I'm sitting there watching. I was like, just stick a sock in it. And then he reaches and grabs the dirty jock. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah, yes. It's definitely one of those movies where it's just like, what the fuck? Like, and that's the thing. Those movies were able to do some of that stuff. Where I think today, if you tried to, and you asked me this question about if I think they could make this movie today, I think they could, but honestly, it'd be kind of like what National Lampoon tried to do to be relevant, you know, with like Dorm Days, all them movies.
I think, like, okay, I did bring that up. I'll go ahead and elaborate on that. When I was watching the movie, because remakes are a thing nowadays, and so whenever I'm watching an old movie from the 80s or 70s, I'm like, oh, if they were to remake this today, what cast would be good? So as I'm watching it, I'm thinking the Broken Lizard Gang. I think if they remade this movie, they would give it justice, and I think they'd bring the right humor to it. Of course, an updated version or whatnot, but but then again, they're kind of old for those parts, considering that it revolves around high schoolers. So if they played like the adult characters and had some younger people in their comedians, it'd probably work out. So as long as they gave their their artistic lendings to it, I guess. So,
well, yeah, and I mean, at the same time, this movie was kind of revolutionary back in 81. I mean, you did have Caddyshack, which kind of it was hit or miss as a comedy. You know, they had the comedy, then the seriousness, and then, you know, they went outlandish with a gopher that could dance to a song.
Oh, yeah.
But with Porky's, what? I mean, you had, like you said, you had the stereotypes of that era of mm-hmm. 1954 in which it was based. You had Alex Karras, who plays Porky's brother, who's a cop. You have Porky, who is the proprietor of a strip club in the Everglades, who's a major pain in the ass.
Oh, he's definitely the antagonist for sure.
Definitely. I mean, he is such an asshole. But that's the thing. All these characters play a tremendous role within this movie.
Like, I think movies like this. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to step on you.
No, you're good. Delay. I think these coming of age movies is what really nailed home what people in the 80s probably were feeling. You know, I mean, granted, I was born in the 90s, so I can't really say, oh, hey, the 80s were a blast, man.
But so this movie in particular, and I want to harken back, you had brought up saying you were born in the 90s. I was born in the late 70s. So I was 77. So when this movie came out, I was like, what, 4 years old? And I remember when right, showing my age. Actually, the first movie I was ever in the theaters for was Star Wars in 77. But damn. I digress. Anyway, I remember finding this movie in my parents' movie collection, probably some 11, 12 years old. You know, that time period for us young guys when we're starting to find things out about ourselves, you know. And, of course, it being a TNA movie, and I'm like, ooh, what is Porky's? Because if you remember the box, I think it had like this hot chick on there.
Yeah.
You could see, yeah.
So a guy like, looking through an eye looking through the peephole. Yep.
Yeah, that's what it was. And I'm like, you know, when you're that young, you're thinking porn. Granted, it's not even soft porn, but back then it was almost taboo for somebody of that age to watch. And I remember finding it and waiting for my parents to go out. And as soon as I did, I grabbed that. Yes, it was VHS. I pop it out, pop it into the VCR. And I was amazed. That was probably the first adult comedy movie I had ever watched in my entire life was Porky's. So that set the stage.
Yeah. I wish mine would have been Porky's, but mine was actually Animal House.
Okay. I mean, you being born in the 90s and that being your first raunchy adult comedy, that's impressive. Very impressive.
Well, I mean, my parents, it was the TV version of it, so it was, like, edited, and it took out kind of the parts where it'd been like, well, should the kids see this? But, I mean, even at that, it was still, like, yeah, it was still one of those movies that made you think, like, wow, you know, how Porky's was able to get away with some of the stuff they did, how Animal House got away with some of the shit they did. But like we said, you know, it is definitely a product of its time, but such a great movie.
Well, just, I think movies like that paved the way for other movies down the road. Just like the opening scene where Pee-wee's, the alarm clock's going off. He's got that morning wood going on and his mom barges in and he flips over and, well, about breaks it. But it paved the way for movies like, you know, I want to say late 90s, early aughts, Superbad, American Pie, movies like that. You harken back to movies like Porky's, and nowadays you're like, okay, I mean, this raunchy comedies of today is nothing new because it's already been done. It's just a different story. But the element of that raunchiness, that coming of age that you had talked about, is a lot of those movies are actually based around, you know, high schoolers and et cetera, et cetera. So it's always been a trope to do movies like that. And they're typically pretty good because of that raunchiness factor in it.
Well, I mean, yeah. And granted, Porky's would have two sequels. And then I think they kind of had, like, someone did try and soft reboot it, but it didn't really work out.
Did not know that. I have watched two. It's been a long time. I don't think I liked it as much as the original. I don't remember anything about it.
Well, and that's the thing. I think a lot of what it was back then was that, hey, nonsensical nonsense, how are you doing? Kind of weird how we're, you know, on the YouTube channel recording this and all of a sudden nonsensical nonsense pops out. Like, God, that's like a fourth wall within a fourth wall break there, folks. But no, and that's the thing, like, Alex Karras as the sheriff in this movie, and yet you have the bikers, you have the biker kid that's mad at the Jewish guy because he get his ass kicked by the Jewish guy, and then, you know, they have to have the slurs in there, and it's just like...
Yes, Tim's that's 50s greaser racist redneck father on a 50s Harley, yes.
Yeah.
He fit all those asshole tropes for sure.
Oh, definitely. And that's the thing that always got me was just like, I always look at movies, and there are movies where, you know, the kids of today look back on it differently and go like, you know, maybe they pushed a little too far, but that's not what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and maybe they're right. But at the same time, to us, it's just a movie. Like, I mean, yeah, at the same time, like, what he's saying about the Jewish kid isn't a nice thing to say about someone.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, not like the actor was meaning any of it.
And no, the actor themselves. I mean, it was written in there. I mean, I looked at it like this. It was teaching a moral lesson that, you know, racism and anti-Semitism is wrong. Cause even like in the locker room scene, when Tim is sitting there going, let's go fly a kite. Let's go fly a kite. Like, you know, K-I-T-E. Somebody had a sign, but like, dude, you're not even being a smart racist. It's not kite. It's K-I-K-E. And he's just sitting there dumbfounded. It was pretty funny, I thought. So, I mean, that satire element in the movie when it comes to teaching those lessons about racism is bad, and and being tolerant of other people and stuff. I thought it added a good positive note and element to that movie. It just wasn't all just raunchy comedy. There was actually some good, some moral lessons there. Other parts of it probably hasn't aged so well compared to now and then, but that overall general idea of, you know, hey, racism is bad was always a good element that I always picked up in the movie. So
I love when the mean teacher, she's like, I would like to line up these boys and I can find the perpetrator. I know what they look like.
There's a mole on the tallywhackers, what they called it. She was Ball Blicker, but they all called her Ball Breaker.
Yeah.
She was also a cock blocker too, but especially when it came to that one coach in Honeywell, Coach Honeywell, yep. Was his name, Kim Cattrall's character. Yes.
That is so funny though, that whole scene where Honeywell and the other coach are having sex and the students are losing their mind laughing. And one of the older coaches is kind of like, what the hell is that?
Oh yeah. The one coach that was trying to prod the other coach into sleeping with her upstairs, he lost his shit. Like his face turned around. I was watching, and every time I watch this movie, and you can also see it in the office scene when they're talking about, you know, let's do a police lineup of all the tallywhackers. She can point out, is that a mole on it? They're laughing so much. They're so into that role. It's like, I think they're really laughing. Like that just wasn't them acting. Like they were really into that scene. They were having like really good chemistry with it.
Well, the principal is trying to understand why Ball Breaker is wanting to line these men up and look at their units because she notices the one that, you know, she was grabbing onto, which the shower scene. Oh my God. I felt so bad for that guy.
So the shower scene, the Lassie scene, and of course at the end when they tear down Porky's bar, and the egg scene in the beginning, I think for me are probably the most four iconic scenes in this whole movie. Definitely.
Yes. When they tear down. Well, see, here's the thing: when they get thrown out of Porky's, one of their classmates makes attempt each time to go back there and comes back after getting their ass kicked.
Yes, Mickey would never learn his lesson the entire time. Yep.
And Mickey finally comes back near the end of the movie and he has really gotten his ass kicked pretty bad to the point where Kavanaugh, who is like the deputy of the town, comes and says, you know what, we need to take Porky down. And
Kavanaugh, the police of that town, was Mickey's brother. I think it was his brother.
I think his name was Kavanaugh, or maybe that was the biker. It's been like a long time since I've seen this film, but I can still remember.
I sent you the link. You didn't watch it,
dude. Like I've been busy with everything else going on right now. Like.
You're good if you do use that link, because it was the only place I can find it where it was streaming. Yeah. Just so everybody out there knows, it was on OMGflix with an X.org. And if you watch any movie from that website, have your ad blocker up. Every time I paused it, played anything, just like go 10 seconds back so I can, it's just pop up, pop up, pop up, pop up. I'm like, oh, I bet Steven's having a headache with this too. But you saved yourself the headache.
Yeah, if I'm gonna watch that, like it was on Amazon Prime a while back, and I was just like, oh, I should watch this movie, and I didn't. I had it saved to the watch list, and then all of a sudden my wife's like, well, let's watch a different movie, and it's like, okay. So then we watched a different raunchy comedy, and yeah.
I used to own a copy of it. I had it on DVD, but I don't think I have a DVD player anymore.
And we do say this, the movie that we got at Porky's, they should have just made it the unrated version. I swear to God, if they have an unrated version of Porky's somewhere, I feel like there wouldn't be much new footage that we hadn't already seen.
No, I don't think they really did movies like that back then. I think what we saw is what came off the cutting room floor. I don't think they.
Yeah.
You know, those like director's cuts or unrated versions or anything, but you never know. Maybe one day they'll find some old locked up 8mm reels and be like, oh, let's recut this.
Yeah.
Might be good.
I mean, and that's the scary thing. Like, if you could have imagined the bloopers for that movie.
Oh, like, the blooper reel for that movie, I bet it would be amazing. It would be just gold. It would be gold.
Well, exactly. And, you know, when we did, when me and Blazin were talking about what we wanted to do for this show, you know, even just talking about Porky's probably isn't enough, because a lot of those movies in the 80s, it seemed like they tried to top themselves in the comedy realm. I mean, yeah, you had the John Hughes comedies, but those ones were dealing more with teen issues and, you know.
Oh, I don't know. I think this one dealt with the with Pee-wee's teen issue, is trying to lose his virginity the entire time of the movie.
I laugh when he's like, the condom's too big, and the big guy's just like, well, wrap it. Or
just tie a knot in it.
Yeah. Like, that's going to work.
Oh, I liked when Wendy gave him that huge freaking condom, and then I forgot what character it was, but he takes it and he blows it up, and he's going around like humping other female students, and then he turns around and there's old fucking ball breaker. And then the air comes rushing out of it, and it sounds like it was a balloon squeaking, losing air. I'm like, condoms losing air don't even sound like that. What the fuck? Speaking of sound effects, when Porky's bar was being torn down, I swear to God, it sounded like somebody's right off camera with a huge sheet of metal just banging on it.
Yeah, and I mean, when they tore that down at the end, like, it is funny as hell. Because it's just like, okay, guys, you're high school students, and you're making this look like it's a paramilitary operation.
They did, absolutely. It was like Navy SEAL Team 6 going in to take down Porky's. Yep.
Our mission is no longer take down Osama bin Laden, it is take down Porky's. Well, and that's the thing. Like, the ending is just like, okay, guys, you're high school students. You should not be knowing how to do all this shit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, sawing through the boards and all that, okay, I can understand that. That's easy. But, like, I mean, they had, in, like, just 5 minutes of planning this out, it was like, well, Jesus, what? You call the 81st Airborne to help you out, too?
Yes. Dude, every single car in there, of course, this movie was set in the 50s, yeah. 54. Every single car in there looked like it was brand new off the freaking showroom floor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because you have all these affluent white kids from like the coastline going to the Everglades to redneck freaking Central, walking up in a strip bar being like, we want to pay for some pussy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And they were way out of their element.
Yeah, that was the thing. It was just like, okay, you're going to the Everglades to a strip club. But yet, like you said, they probably lived on the coast, and there's no strip club near you guys. Like, I mean, come on, it's Florida. Let's be honest. And it's just like, really, there's no strip clubs in the whole state of Florida. Oh, but no, we gotta go to Everglades just to find the lonely strip club.
I don't know. I don't know my stripper club culture down in Florida in the 50s. Honestly, didn't think strip clubs were a thing in the 50s, but I didn't know a lot of things were around in the 50s, like that big giant size gag condom. I didn't know gag gifts were like a thing like that back then. I was shocked when I saw that. I was like, I forgot about that part. I'm like, where'd this huge condom come from in the 50s? I didn't, you know, but hey.
The one thing that surprised me is they didn't get Chevy Chase or Bill Murray to be in this movie.
So, yes. Well, it wasn't a big production.
Well, no.
For actors of that caliber at that point in movie making, I don't think.
It was pretty much the probably unknowns. I mean, I would be shocked if Kim Cattrall had done anything to that point. Maybe soap operas, because those were big in, I mean, kind of still are. And maybe that's how she got her start. Who knows? But I think this movie catapulted for what she would later do in the 90s with Sex and the City. But yeah, I mean, this movie did pretty much put a lot of those actors on the map. And sadly, we've lost quite a few of them. And to be honest, I think this movie is a testament to 80s raunchy comedy. I really do. Because, yeah, it did have two sequels after this. And like I said, kind of like a soft core reboot. But, I mean, it's just this movie alone, if you've never seen any of the other ones, you're really not missing much. Because they didn't understand what they had with Porky's. And I think Porky's 2 kind of tried to jump the shark in an absolute different direction.
Like I said earlier, I don't ever remember watching Porky's 2. I know I did. But anybody out there has never seen the Porky's franchise, literally, if you just watch the first one, that's all you need to enjoy it. The first one stands alone by itself. No sequels were actually ever needed, I think.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, it always did bother me when you have these great movies and then all of a sudden it's like, well, we had one good shot. Let's try and see what else we can do with it, you know, and like you said, you know, Porky's didn't need any sequels. But the same could be said with one thing that did shock me and does to this day is they didn't try and make it into a TV series. Because they did that with Animal House.
Did they really? I did not know that.
Yeah, they did. They did it with Animal House. And then, of course, when we got the later National Lampoons, like Dorm Days and all that, it was pretty much an attempt to try and go back to what had worked. Because by that point, National Lampoon in the late 2000s was on its deathbed. And, I mean, the magazine had pretty much stopped circulating, and it was just hanging on by a thread with these movies that they made. And none of the movies that they tried to replicate what had worked in the 80s didn't really work in the 2000s or in the 90s as well, because
I think some of them did. I think, like I said, Superbad, and I think American Pie worked. But after they came out with sequel after sequel after sequel after sequel, that's what really just killed the franchise.
Well, definitely. And and for all those that are joining us, we're not just talking, we are talking about Porky's, but in the general area of it, I think we're also talking about comedy and how far it's come today. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. You know,
Go ahead.
But, I mean, even with how comedy was, like with the Mel Brooks era of the late 70s to 80s to now, I mean, Blazing Saddles, if we really want to go down that rabbit hole, that movie could not be made today.
I disagree, but that's a debate for another day.
And I mean, with Animal House, could they get away with, you know, some of that today? Maybe. But I think it would have to be like a finer line than what, because you got to realize the censors and all that, I'm sure they had their finger ready to hit that button and say, nope, this movie will not be made.
I think in a lot of way, I mean, movies have become less censored. I mean,
well, yeah.
In some aspects, they're definitely more restrained. But I also think that sometimes when certain elements of a certain or particular art forms are restrained, it has those artists, depending on their art, to come up with different creative ways. So So I think it's like a double-edged sword. Yes, it's bad in some ways, but yes, it can be good as well. So,
well, and that's the thing, you know, comedy has to evolve. You know, what would work back in, like we said, in the 80s probably didn't, it probably still worked in the 90s, but then, you know, you got to keep evolving with the times. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say, and like we touched on the question you had asked earlier about could Porky's be made today? Yeah, but I think there'd be so many different, like, in your face messages, where back then it was kind of like there was the messages, there was the mm-hmm. political undertones, but I don't think it would be as bad as today, because a lot of the comedy movies have to have that. Well, back then it was okay to say this, but now, you know, it's kind of like we can't touch on it.
I don't know. So there was a scene in Porky's. It was the prank phone call Pee-wee played on Wendy, where he called the deadbeat diner, which I think calling a diner a deadbeat, I think is just an awesome name. But anyway, where he calls and it's that old phone prank, and I totally forgot this is the movie that coined it, the Michael Hunt freaking prank phone call where you call like, hey, I'm looking at my, he was like, he calls you like, hey, a friend of mine was supposed to show up there. I'm calling to see if he's there. And Wendy's like, well, what's his name? He goes, Michael Hunt. And he goes, you just call him Mike Hunt. She's over the loudspeaker. I had totally forgot. I didn't forget about that prank phone call or that joke. I mean, it's been around for decades. I just forgot where it came from. This is the movie it came from.
So. I had even forgot about that scene. God, I should have watched that link you sent me. But
like I said, I watched it, and I got a whole bunch of notes over here with different scenes.
Like, I mean, the shower scene, like we kind of glossed over, that scene in particular, like they're watching the lady shower, and Pee-wee gets blocked by a student, and he's like, move your ass. So then Ballbreaker comes in, and she sees one of them with his unit.
Tallywhacker.
Wagging in the fucking little peephole. So what does she do? She, like, zeroes in on it and just friggin' yanks on it while his friends are laughing at him, not trying to help him out of this situation.
I think it was funny. Like, she's got this grip on it. She puts her foot up on the wall. Like, she's really just like, she's trying to like pull his entire body, or not just rip it off, but pull him entirely through that little itty bitty hole.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. She was, she really wanted that. She really wanted to bust that guy.
when she's telling the principal how she wants to find the perpetrator, I mean, that principal alone has got to be like, oh my God, how did I ever hire this lady? Like, lawsuits would happen. And and he's like, so let me get this straight. You want us to line these boys up and you can tell us what they look like from their tallywhackers. And the two people in the back are just dying laughing. Like, I wonder if I could find that on TikTok.
Oh, that one coach was like, well, we can go a step farther and call the police station and get a sketch artist down here. We can put up we can put wanted posters up. Like, have you seen this prick?
Yeah, it is what it is back in that day. But see, that's the thing. Is that so much? Oh God, I found it. All right, I will share the screen for this one because this is, oh my God.
Good, it's a good scene to share. And this is one of those scenes where I think the actors like were really into the whole entire part. Like it was less of them acting and them just getting into it.
But I think this is the only way to find that boy. Now that penis had a mole on it. I'd recognize that penis anywhere. In spite of the juvenile snickers of some, this is a serious matter. That seducer and spoiler must be stopped. He's extremely dangerous. And Mr. Carter, I'm certain that everyone in this room knows who that is. He's a contemptible little pervert who's
a spellbreaker.
Well, I'm sorry. But I've got him now, and I'm not going to let him slip through my fingers.
But it did slip through her fingers.
A few minutes. The coaches can be present. Tommy Turner and any four boys you see fit to choose. And we can put a stop to this menace. And it is a menace. Well, what are you going to do about it? Five young boys in the nude, a police lineup, so that you can identify his tallywhacker. Please, can we call it a tallywhacker? Penis is so personal. Penis is so personal. You can put hoods over their heads to avoid embarrassment. Yeah. Now listen, we have got to do it as distasteful as it is. I know it's him. That tally had a mole on it. And that mole is the key to it.
Miss Fabrica, do you realize the difficulty of your request? Now, I would be very happy to apprehend the young man myself. But can you imagine what the Board of Education would say if you were granted a lineup in order to examine their private their private parts for an incriminating mole?
But Mr. Carter.
Mr. Carter. Mm-hmm. I think I have a way out of this. Call the police, and we have them send over one of their sketch artists. And Miss Ballbreaker can give a description. We can put up wanted posters all over school.
You could just tell the principal's trying to not lose it.
Mm-hmm. You had brought up blooper reels earlier. I bet this scene, they had many takes.
Oh, I'm sure. I love that. We'll put on the wanted poster, armed and dangerous. Oh my God. Yeah, like, and that's the thing. Like, they're talking about the Board of Education getting involved. Even back then, I am sure that would have been a publicity nightmare for that school. Not only did she want to, and she later says, well, in order for discretion, we could put hoods on them. And it's just like, oh my God, like, this teacher, honestly, you're watching that scene and going like, how in the hell would that teacher get away with, even though the students in the shower scene were in the wrong, they were invading the women's privacy. But, I mean, she literally grabs the guy's tallywhacker with, like, such a grip on there. And the other kids are laughing because they're like, oh, she's got something. And the poor kid's just trying to get out of there. And it's just like, oh, my God. But that's the way this movie was.
I think today's episode is brought to you by the letter T for tallywhacker. Sorry, I just find that word tallywhacker so fucking hilarious.
I know. All I can think of is the count from fucking Sesame Street going like, the word of today is tallywhacker.
Yes. Yes. So movies this old, they didn't have a whole lot of brand placement or product placements. So you don't see like Coca-Cola and Pepsi and all that shit splatter all over the fucking scene. But yeah. There was one thing that stood out. I watch old movies like this, like all those little details, like within props and stuff, like, oh, that prop shouldn't be there. It's out of time for that period. I don't know what it is. I got OCD for that shit. But there was a beer that Meat, by the way, anybody with the nickname Meat that has the potential for a scholarship to go to Princeton, no. I mean, he didn't get it, but I'm just like, no. But he was drinking a beer called Regal Ale. So I looked it up. It was brewed in New Orleans, and it's been discontinued. So I was kind of sad about that. But I don't know. It was just a little tidbit of factoid. Nothing important.
Oh yeah, I mean, definitely back in the day, product placement probably back in the day wasn't as big. I mean, yeah, you would see the old Coca-Cola little plastic cups in movies back in that time. But I mean, it's not like they're like, oh hey, look. Brand placement, you know. Yeah.
Well, that's just a testament to our time where ad revenue is like one of the hugest things that, well, we spend money on, to tell the truth. But
well, yeah, and I mean, nowadays most movies, if they do have that, it's trying to sell the product. I mean, heck.
Yep. Well, that's where some of the movies get their financial backing is for from all these companies. Like, hey, we'll invest in your movie to make if you know, advertise our brand in your movie. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. And that's the next major thing about this is that if they would have had some brand placement in this movie, do you think they would have went overboard with it? Or do you think it would have been just...
I hate to say that I think product placement takes value away from a movie because it's so all over the place now. But I think in some ways it does. I think it because when you're watching a scene in this movie, like I said, had no brand placement. When you're watching this movie and it's scenes, like you're paying attention to the scene. You're not sitting here watching and all of a sudden Coca-Cola, you know, like squirrel, you know, you can actually appreciate the movie for what it is. So,
well, definitely. And you know, as we keep talking about some of the key scenes in this movie is what it is. It's an 80s masterpiece that, honestly,
I thought you were going to call it an 80s masturbation movie at first.
Not going to touch that subject. I mean, let's be honest, a lot of people probably saw that scene with Kim Cattrall, and I mean, you know, hey, you know,
and they were probably screaming like a banshee too.
I love how he got so involved with trying to find out why she was called Lassie while they're having sex. It's like, dude, focus on the task at hand. Like, there's no way this chick in real life would have ever found you of any importance.
Well, the few scenes that led up to the buildup of the laundry room, I guess that's where all the...
Yeah, the laundry room.
The previous coach was like, we'll just get her up there. And he was like, oh, no, no, no. But he was dating her. And he was saying shit like, well, she's a virgin. She doesn't screw around and blah, blah, blah. She's like pure. As soon as he got her up in there, she's like, she smelled all the dirty jock straps and got turned on. So... yeah,
it's like, yeah, I don't think she's pure anymore, buddy.
She ever was. So
no, and that's the thing. Like, this movie is in no way gonna be like, oh, you know, hey, we're not gonna shy away from talking about sexuality. They don't.
No, I mean, that was its main plot, was sexuality. I mean, like I said, it was about Pee-wee's quest to learn his virginity. Yeah. I mean, the whole movie revolved around sex, which isn't which isn't bad. I don't.
Well, no, it can be a plot. Get that piece, away from but here, but it yeah. Oh, wasn't. Yeah.
It was
like,
a huge plot yeah. piece. So
I mean, because they first try, you know, hiring a stripper at Porky's, they end up going into the cabin in the woods.
So the cabin in the woods, I thought, was one of the most hilarious scenes. So I don't know who's ever watching this. If you haven't seen Porky's, what had happened was two of the friends hired this big black dude and this one stripper lady. I think her name was, I got it down right here. Hold on. Miss Cherry something. Shoot.
And the scene anyway, plays out where
anyway, so Miss Cherry Forever was her name, and so what they did is these two friends got a bunch of their other friends in on this idea of going to this cabin, which looked like a 50s trap house.
It really again, does.
It did. It was a ran down shack. And the thing was, they were all the friends were going to line up and take turns getting laid, and they were going to pay for it, of course. So they walk in, and the two friends are like, "Okay, everybody get naked." And they're like, "Why?" And they're like, "Well, she's got to check you for VD." And yeah. They're like, "How does she just look at us and tell that we have VD?" Well, she's an expert, apparently, is what he said. So they all line up. The two friends that are that's orchestrated this prank go into the room with her, and they start pretending like they're having sex, making the noises, bouncing up and down on the bed. And all of a sudden, the black guy's in there too, and he's got this machete with fake blood all over it. She yep. smashes the window, and you can hear the dude go, "Why are you fucking my wife?" or some bullshit like that. And all the naked guys out all lined up are like, "What's going on?" And then one of the kids that was, you know, that helped orchestrate this had fake blood all over him. So he comes bursting out of the freaking door, falling over like he's dying. And they all lose their shit. And they all book out the door when the black guy comes out with the machete. They turn tail, and all of them realize it was a joke, after a couple minutes.
Except for Pee-wee.
Pee-wee's hauling ass butt naked down the road, and that's when the cops pull up next to him. "Pull over. Let me see your license and registration." Yes, very, very good scene.
I just love how they're coming up on Porky Pee-wee running, and they're just like, "Oh my god." I mean, and that's the thing. Like, back in those days when they made these movies, like, people... kids or teenagers today would probably watch this movie and be like, how are they not bringing him to the police station for, you know, indecent exposure or whatever, nude in public or whatever shit like that. And it's just like,
yeah,
because they probably realized at one point they did the same shit too.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, in some ways, and when it comes to things like that, it's gotten stricter over time. They take less, they're harsher. I agree. I mean, and just like them, like, tearing down the freaking Porky's bar and putting people's lives in danger and et cetera, et cetera. But again, it's a movie. It's fantasy. I don't like to judge it too much against reality, but I do see what you're talking about.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, with this movie is that, even though people would probably nitpick it to death, it is what it is, and that's a movie. And it's a funny movie. Like, it's definitely one of those movies of the 80s that was like, it was different, but it also didn't play up to, well, you know, we're kind of like a high school version of Animal House. Let's be Animal House. It's not like that at all. It literally, as I say it, was the product of the early 80s. And they didn't it try was a and product too over the top.
It was a product of the early 80s trying to recreate a movie from the or recreate
70s.
A time setting of the 50s, actually.
Well, yeah.
So, and that's and it's weird because I've noticed this with other movies that are like made at a certain time, but it's representing the time setting is representative of decades prior. And so they just hit on a lot of those tropes that you hear about in that time. So that's what I got out of it.
Glick's over here trying to make fun of me because I used literally.
I haven't been watching the comments.
Yeah, I kind of try and show comments every now and then. But
I have like I said, I actually typed out notes and I have my notes up on the side, so it's covering all the comments.
Well, hey, you know, maybe one day Blazing becomes the second chair of this show. I'm looking for one, but we're trying this out. We're seeing how it works. You know, who knows? Maybe I have a big, huge round table. I mean, you know, Nonsensical Nonsense has 4 people on some of their shows.
God, Saturday nights, though, it's a plethora of pranksters delightfully engaging in shenanigans.
I don't know. When most people are accusing me of having my wife handcuffed to a radiator, I don't know. But, I mean, hey, maybe we're all living out fantasy of we're back in those comedy movies, which I really don't have my wife handcuffed to anything. If anything, I'd be in a cage for that.
Well, I mean, if anything, you can tell that the creators of Nonsensical Nonsense definitely get their comedic aspirations from movies like Porky's. So it's good.
A bunch of dick and fart jokes. That's what absolutely. We are. Yes, we don't stray away from it.
Man, I don't care how old a person is. If you don't freaking find fart jokes funny when you're 50, you're not going to find them funny when you're 80. You can go funny somewhere else.
Well, and that's the thing. You look back on how some people found a lot of this funny. And literally, it's stupid comedy is what made this movie what it was. And some people don't like it. I mean, hell, there's people that don't like what Monty Python did. There's people that don't like what Three Stooges did.
Well, I think a lot of times, and Porky's is a good example. People will watch it like, oh, it's just nothing but dirty jokes. And it's really not. Like you said, like I was saying earlier, you peel back those layers of that onion and you get the satire poking fun at racism and how racism is stupid and, drop all your differences. We can come together as friends and yada, yada, yada. I mean, those are real valuable moral lessons that anybody can take away. And of course, it's underneath this raunchy comedy of fart jokes and tit jokes and penis jokes and all that, because that's real life too. We have those things and we joke about it and we all have these experiences that are awkward at times, and that's what they make fun of. And I think it's good. Within itself, those raunchy jokes also bring the message that we're all human. We have awkward experiences. It's better just to laugh at them.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, this movie has so many of the comedy tropes that have made comedy even back in the day. It's got the slapstick. It's got the, like you said, the satire, you know, the coming of age. You know, the how we were all at one point kind of like, you know, we're becoming, I mean, guys, let's be honest, when we're seniors, some of us were like, hey, you know, we're seniors and we're listening to some of our friends tell us about, oh, man, I had sex with this girl and that girl. And we're kind of just like, okay, cool, like, sweet, you know, And that's the thing. This movie pretty much is a calling card to what I'm sure a lot of teenagers felt. You know, it was just like, oh, or not a lot of teenagers, mostly the deranged ones. You know, let's be honest, because of shit they get away with in that movie. Like you said, in the Flophouse Cabin. Like, how in your right mind are you going to be like, oh, yeah, this chick that's done this as her calling is going to be able to tell that I have VD just by looking at me. Like, unless
she's an expert.
Yeah. And then of course, you know, you got a kid running down in the dark, stark ass naked. And you have the cops kind of going like, okay. It's like, it honestly was what some of our friends probably did in high school, because let's be honest, as kids, we were kind of dumb.
Yeah, there's a, I have a story that involves a strip club, me peeing in a parking lot, and a cop, but that's for another night.
Oh man, I think that's the Saturday night. But yes,
that would be a Saturday night thing.
And that's the thing, like, let's be honest. How many of us didn't have friends that would tell you about, oh, hey, I peed on a cop car, or, oh, hey, you know, I did this stupid thing the other night, and, you know, all that stuff. I mean, I'm surprised that they didn't try and make a Porky's movie based off of, like, kids in a church. Like, I think that would have been funny, because I, like, stories from the strip club. I mean, Glick, you know, I can send you that link. You can come in and, you know, we can share story times. Well, I've never been to a strip club. Never.
I have a couple strip club stories, like literally two or three, and they all involve me getting kicked out. So, yeah.
Not gonna say I could see that, but
yeah, I'm a smart ass. But that's what got me kicked out, was me being a smart ass.
Okay, he wasn't touching the strippers, everyone.
No, I wasn't doing anything like that. No, it was just, I was being a smart ass to either the bouncer.
You know what, Alyssa? Facts on facts. Well, most women live longer because they're not as stupid as we are. And I hate to say it, guys, but a lot of us are idiots. I mean, hey, if you take over the show, it might be better than me hosting. I mean, right now I'm kind of going, like, looking at dead air, you know, in a way. Blazing's doing amazing. Like, I love what Blazing's doing, but
that's because I came prepared. I did my homework.
Oh, okay, nerd.
I am a nerd.
God, I wish I had that. So much of a nerd. You know what? Maybe I have that.
I made sure I had time to watch this movie because, one, it's one of my favorites, and two, I wanted it fresh on the brain.
I need a Jeff. That's what I need. Just so, like, for that nerd one, he could play it. Damn it.
Oh. you'll build those in time. Don't worry. You're good.
You are good. Here we go.
Nerd, you're a fucking nerd.
Nerd,
you're a fucking nerd.
And no one likes you.
Point no one likes you.
Fair. I tell you what, I don't think inflation has really hit strip clubs as much as it has hit everything else, because back in the 50s, the tip a stripper was $1. Today in 2024, people still tip $1.
Today, you got to use a credit card for that.
True.
I didn't know where I was. I'm so sorry, folks. I did not know where I was going with that one. And
You are good.
I'm not going to explain the joke, everyone. But no, I definitely do think, and I want to say this, if anyone hasn't seen this movie, go check it out. I mean, you can buy the movie, it's worth the buy. You can watch it on, you know, which surprised me, YouTube doesn't have it. I mean, honestly, with YouTube and free movies, I'm very shocked that they don't have that movie, because, I mean, oh man, I would love to watch that on the free version of YouTube. But I've noticed with this show, we kind of either need a Jeff or we need a Glick, someone that knows what they're doing.
Reach your private chat real quick. So oh shoot, that was the wrong window. I apologize. So do you have any, like, what was your favorite part of the movie? Like, out of the entire movie, what's your favorite scene?
That is such a good question. I think my favorite part of the whole scene is where Ballbreaker wants to line these kids up and pretty much wants to be able to have like a police lineup of kids that are showing her their tallywhacker.
That word's never gonna stop being not funny.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we're gonna wrap it up. What's your favorite part in that whole movie?
You know, like I said, I hadn't watched it in a while, and I almost forgot about the part. It was the part in the flop house. It was another part of the movie where I thought that, like, every time they were laughing at each other, and it's if they seemed like they were actually so into that role, it made it seem like it was like a real event going on. And it's just when they're standing there all lined up and they hear all the sounds and they're looking at each other like, oh my God, what's going on? Are we about to die? And blah, blah, blah. I just think that was amazing. Like the pranks that they pull on each other. Amazing. Amazing. From the eggs to that, to a lot of the other things. But yes, that scene I think was probably the pinnacle of pranks in that whole entire movie.
Well, Blazing, thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, I had a blast.
I love it. You are right. I think if we tried to do another hour of this, it would be more of a struggle fest, which let's be honest, some of the shows here, sometimes we hit nails on the head. Other times we do struggle sometimes, but hey, that's the podcasting business. But like I said, thank you again so very much. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. Like I said, man, I will sit here and dork out on movies anytime.
Oh, definitely. And you're always welcome.
Cool. Sounds great.
So, also, don't forget to check out other shows on the Nonsensical Network, like the Jarvis Podcast here on every Sunday. Almost said Saturday. I think that was bad. Before we started, I called this the Deluxe Edition Network. Oof. But also, we have on Mondays, we have Men Caring for Men, which is a men's mental health show hosted by Glick. You also see me on that one with Connor. Tuesdays, every other Tuesdays, it's Dollars and Cents, which is going to become another new show hosted by Jeff. Wednesdays is Nonsensical Nonsense, which is hosted by Glick, featuring us just being us on a Wednesday. Thursdays, we take the day off for Talking Shit. That's SHTTT, who is now a new member on the network, hosted by Mark and Brian. Funny, funny guys. They're going to have a collaboration with a show that's on Friday called Glick's House of Music, where they will be talking with Richie Ramone of the Ramones. Saturday, we have the Open Door Challenge, where we share the link in the chat. People can come on as long as you show your face. Because honestly, let's be honest, we've been hit with a lot of shit like that. And also, you can also go see Helen's Mixtape, where Helen gives... God, how am I going to say this? She gives and interviews a bunch of great topics. So go check them out at the Nonsensical Nonsense Network. I'm Stephen Jarvis. That's Blazin'. And we will see you all next time.